call me friend.
Blog Talk Radio.
From Ohio. I am one with God and you. Without me, life is so vain.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings with those who are alive, because we want to stay alive in Torah Chaim, structures of kindness, Torah Rachem, Torah Mercy, Torah Tova, the good Torah. You're now tuned into, as you were just tuned into, Light in the Darkness by veteran and one of the great musicians of our generation, Isaac Piton, Light in Darkness. And this is now soul class number 277, one step closer to heaven on earth, earth and heaven, in search of ancient authentic Torah number 66. Today we are joined by Rambam teacher and student and advocate for the dissemination of the teachings of Rambam, not just to the Jewish people, but Kol Boi Olam, all the inhabitants of the earth, the human family living experience, Dennis Ryan. But before we bring Dennis in live, I want to give you a little description of what today's show is about. Blessed souls, blessed is our Creator. Blessed souls, we are standing on the macrocosmic virtual Red Sea, or I should say on the coast of the macrocosmic virtual Red Sea. Virtual forms of Egyptian bondage within our thoughts, speech, and actions pursue us to inquire if we truly seek freedom or want to return to enslavement to the exclusion of intimate configuring. Or configuration with our divine image, Tzelem Elokim, which is no dream, a blessing and a responsibility given to every human being born, as being born even at this very moment as we speak, as we present this humble meditation before your blessed eyes. And P.S., this also concerns every human being that will ever be born upon this blessed planet. The choice is ours, blessed souls. Meanwhile, how can we forget the following verses from Genesis chapter 3, verses 10 through 12, quote from Genesis. And he said, this is Adam responding to the Most High in last week's class, we talked about the Most High said, where are you, Adam? And now this is Adam, original man's response. And he said, quote, I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. And he said, meaning the Most High said, quote, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree that I commanded you that you should not eat? And the man said, quote, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me from the tree, and I did eat. Blessed souls, who was original man Adam Arishon trying to kid? Obviously, he knew that the Most High would know where he would be even before attempting to hide himself. As well, what is this about blaming his wife for his misdoing? Please, blessed souls, take out your Torah Sherlock Holmes spiritual magnifying glasses and join us again for another inquiry, as well as teachings of Rambam, Chabad Chassidus, and discussions about prophecy during our broadcast, which is right now here on Turtle Island at 10:35 Eastern Standard Time, a.k.a. the USA. Meanwhile, may the Ein Sof, Infinite Creator, bless you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And I think we also have, as well as Dennis Ryan, I think this could be Washington, Cartrell Gore, president of the Booker T. Washington Business League. But let's first bring in Cartrell, then we'll welcome Dennis and Cartrell together.
Booker T. Havarim, and a very belated Hag Sameach.
Thank you very much, Cartrell. And good morning, Dennis. On this beautiful Sunday morning. I'm sorry, please continue, Dennis.
Yes, well, it's we call it Easter time, but it's also celebrated by many other religions throughout the world because it's based on the lunar calendar. But I was at a Catholic Mass ceremony last night, and I'm sitting there, I'm listening to Genesis being read, Exodus being read, and I was told that this is Passover time, and I'm saying, wow, I'm in a Catholic church and I'm hearing this. But they went even further. They started talking about the dignity of Abraham as well as to rejoice in the Exodus from Egypt. So I was sort of gratified to a certain extent that the Catholic Church remembered where its roots came from and it wasn't letting go.
Very good. Cartrell, speaking about dignity, and Dennis, we spoke about before the show, and thank you, Cartrell, president of the Booker T. Washington Business League, and hopefully in the future, if not in this show, you can give us some good news, how people can link up with you to try to empower the citizens of New York City and the environs beyond. Gentlemen, I heard last Friday morning, of all places, which I have no problem listening to, I don't necessarily agree with everything I hear on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. However, they do have very stimulating programs about human rights activists. And last Friday morning, and Cartrell, you might want to comment on this, I actually heard that there was an interview, well, I actually heard it in real time. Her name was Claudette Corvell, I apologize, I'm not remembering her last name correctly. She actually preceded Rosa Parks as being the first, to this date, that is known, the first African-American woman at the tender age of 15, several months before Rosa Parks took her heroic stand not to go to the back of the bus, I believe, in the state of Alabama. And Miss Colvern, or Colvert, hopefully I'm pronouncing her name right, and if I'm not, please forgive me. Those of you who do know her name, you can call in and correct me at 347-838-8669, or maybe Cartrell or Dennis can, that she mentioned, she was asked about, well, how do you feel, Claudette, that, you know, Rosa Parks was, at the time of her passing on to the next level of life, was honored at the Senate Rotunda. She was the first African-American woman honored for her bravery. When you actually preceded her, and a statue was made in her image, which I personally told Dennis before the show, I think that wherever Miss Parks is, or Mrs. Parks is located now in the bosom of Hashem's Garden of Eden, that she would rather people take action rather than just look at some sort of replication of her as a statue, because she was not made of metal. She was made of flesh and blood with a divine image. So Miss Claudette spoke with tremendous humility and deep wisdom of a woman who suffered and triumphed over 59 years ago, I guess it was, 55, 54, in one of those 2 years, 1954 and 1955. And she said, no, we know, we understand that in the sum total, in the span total of human history, there have been many icons who symbolize striving to improve human rights, to increase human freedom upon the earth. And then there's the rest of us who are part of that scenario, but we don't get the accolations or the praises. Although Claudette now spoke, I think, in a church in Newark last week to talk about her experiences. And then I want to go to something that I heard from one of the people that were speaking about Rosa Parks from 6-7 years ago when she was laying in state in the Senate Rotunda, that Mrs. Parks spoke about when she was working some sort of job. I don't know where she was working, but it was a hard job. And coming home after a hard day's work, she would ride on the bus. And she would remind herself that when she went to her local church, that she was told by the preacher, you are a child of God. You are a child of God. And every day she would take it in and take it in and take it in and meditate upon, I am a child of God. I am a child of God. I am a child of God. And then finally, that one great day in the history of this country, the United States of America, she stood up with that meditation, I am a child of God, therefore I shall stand up to this injustice, and the rest is history. Now, what was brought out in that interview with Claudette and the Amy Goodman who interviewed her, and another, there was another commentator, that Rosa Parks' heroism actually sparked the career of one young Alabama up-and-coming preacher by the name of Martin Luther King. So one, the people that pay tribute to Mrs. Parks on that day when she laid in the Senate Rotunda is that see the power of one person internalizing a teaching, which is a biblical teaching, that each one of us are children of God, and see the ripple effect and the tidal wave effect and the exponential benefit it's brought to this human society by desegregating, and hopefully, and there's still a lot more opportunity that has to be provided for all the peoples of this country. But I want to go now to you know, maybe we'll start with Quartrell, this whole idea of empowerment by a person remembering that they are a child of God, and then we'll go to Dennis for his comments or reactions to Quartrell's comments. Quartrell?
Okay, well, as I recall, there were a few women in the same situation as Rosa Parks, before Rosa Parks made her courageous stand. The thing was, some of them were not found to be of good moral character, and that's why the civil rights organization did not want to back them vigorously, because their moral turpitude might have been a distraction. I recently, for $10, purchased the college transcript of my uncle Edward Gore, who graduated from Morehouse in 1934, before they had computers and before they had social security numbers. It's strange how I can get this information and we can't get the same information on President Obama, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I was, the purpose of her defiance and the civil rights rally behind it was not to end desegregation. The purpose was to rearrange segregation,
mm-hmm.
which they admit to. The movement was a success beyond their dreams, and they found they were able to abolish segregation on the buses. They weren't even planning to go that far, but the outcome was better than what they had hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing about my Uncle Edward. My Uncle Edward lived in Atlanta. He did not support the civil rights movement. And if you read the 22nd paragraph of Martin Luther King's letter from a Birmingham jail, you will see that Martin Luther King mentions that some black people, due to their education and economic success, do not sympathize with the civil rights movement. And my Uncle Edward felt that if he can make a living off of Jim Crow, why should he support civil rights? You see, he became a businessman. and he had a travel agency for black people who worked in the segregated insurance industry, where, by the way, they were making good money. And due to Jim Crow laws, they had to come to him. They couldn't go anyplace else. So at first, I was appalled when my uncle refused to support civil rights. I later came to admire him for being able to take a bad situation and do good things with it.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Wow, that's a lot of history, and I hope that our blessed listeners out there will pay great attention to some clarifications made by Cartrell and some pungent particular nuggets of historical occurrence as it applied to his own personal family experience. Dennis, your take on all these matters.
Well, the real question is, do you practice what you believe in? You must practice what you believe in, or else it's not your belief.
Right.
Now, we were all told that we were children of God. Well, what does that mean to everybody? It could mean something different to each person, but as a whole, you can't deny it. So therefore, are you actually going to participate in what you know is the truth? The truth is, there is a God. Do you love him? Do you love yourself? And do you love your fellow humans? Because if you don't, everything falls to crap somewhere along the line. But what is needed is for each person to say, I'm going to do something that I believe in mentally, but am I going to practice it? To say that mentally you're doing it is not really doing it. It's
right.
Just playing out to time almost. But you must pick up something that you believe in and live it. By living it, you will affect other people as well as yourself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And, you know, gentlemen, as we're on live, I got a response because, you know, I promote the show before we go on the air, and I'd like to thank individuals such as Leon Curry Stadelmeyer of University of Kansas, Brian Levy of Stony Brook University, Teresa Lynn Wyatt she's of Cleveland Heights, Tennessee, Rebecca Vanderwerf, who I think is out in Virginia, and I just got a posting from Renee Rasmussen, who I think is from South or North Carolina, who asked me a question. Can we be changed? I wonder. And then I asked her, first I thought maybe she wanted me to delete my promotion from my wall. And I said, please explain. So she said this, oh, nothing like that, more on the mentality field done. Just see people being manipulated by the mainstream media, not recognizing it, liberty and justice disappearing in front of my eyes, and I wonder why doesn't everyone see. But Renee and Dennis and Cartrell and anyone else listening out there, that is the story of Passover. That you can have a oppressive regime, which actually was, in fact, Egypt of those times, 3,225 years ago, was in fact the greatest, most developed, intellectually leveled civilization
up
to that point. They were
Would you call
very
it superpower,
high.
By the way,
what's that?
Would you call it a superpower?
Yes, they were empire. They had conquered into Africa. They had conquered into the Middle East, and we need some African historians who can maybe explain to us and elaborate where they conquered further than that. But to my knowledge, they conquered deep into the Middle East. They conquered into Africa, but yet, the stuttering Levite prophet Moses, because he stuttered up until the time of the giving of the Torah, where he was healed and the rest of the Israelites were healed, and they came up to receive the Ten Commandments and more. He led a nation out of a nation without having to fire a weapon, but rather with unbaked bread on our backs. Now, the Israelites were not totally cleansed of their slave mentality, as we see when we read in the book of Exodus until the end of the book of Deuteronomy. There were those who challenged Moshe because in the back of their minds there was a little bit of slave mentality. It's better that we be provided by the Egyptians, even at the cost of losing our freedom to genuinely connect to the Most High. Now, last night after Shabbat, in our shul, the Blessed Frankel Shul, over here in Kesekron Heights, we see videos of the Rebbe addressing this very issue. And if you remember, gentlemen and blessed souls out there, that on the third, I'm sorry, originally Moses went to Paro and says, we want to go for 3 days into the desert to serve our God. And then Paro said, okay, first take your men, but don't take your cattle. You can take your men and your cattle, but don't take your women and children. It'd be too dangerous. And finally, after the 10th, you know, the plague, the killing of the firstborn, they went out. So the laboratory brought up this very salient point that what happened on the fourth day of the Passover celebration. I mean, remember, gentlemen and blessed souls out there, the original Passover, it wasn't determined yet that there would be a seventh day of Passover, which we'll start to celebrate tonight after nightfall. And so the days following Passover, aside from the fact they were commanded already not to eat leavened food products, they were just basically going out and hoping to celebrate. And those first 3 days are not described in the written scripture with the greatest detail as much as they went from one place to another. And then on the fourth day, now let's remember too, according to the oral Torah traditions, as the Rebbe explained, that in fact the Egyptians had sent spies and observers among the Israelite people, the 12 tribes of Israel, to see what were they going to do after the third day. The Rebbe explained, on the fourth day, which is after the 3 days that Moshe had originally told Paro, that they were going to, you know, offer up and serve the Most High, they decided, we're not turning back. As the national consciousness, even though still plagued by some small doubts about what was going on, as would later play out in the various stories that are told about in the book of Exodus and book of Leviticus and the book of Numbers and the book of Deuteronomy, in terms of not returning to Egypt, on a national conscious level, they decided, we are not turning back. And when the Egyptians demanded, those who had accompanied them, to observe what they would be doing to bring a report back to Pharaoh, they were actually scorned. There's no talk of the fact that any of the Egyptian spies or observers were killed, but they were sent back, as the Rebbe described, with great disgrace to report back to Pharaoh, because remember, he was still the most powerful man on the face of the earth, even though his country had been decimated. To say the Jews, the Israelites, the Hebrew slaves, that we call them slaves, are not turning back. So the Rebbe mentioned also that this was a decisive point in the new founded liberation of this infant nation, so to speak, in terms of from 3 days before when they had the Passover observance. To that point, where actually on the fourth day, they didn't move forward. They stayed and actually took a step backwards. How much of that distance was, I'm not sure, but the Rebbe said they basically took a step as a camp towards back to Egypt, not because they would decide they want to go back to Egypt, to show Paro we are decisive in our point that we are planning to be free, and we were told by our prophet Moses we are going to receive the Torah, the world called scripture, on Mount Sinai. And from there we see from the 5th, 6th, and up until the 7th day, from there that Paro and his 600 chariots had decided they were going to pursue to slaughter the Israelites. So I'm trying to respond to Renee, and I'd like Dennis and Cartrell to respond, that yes, it seems hard to change, but if we don't make the motions of change and the resolutions of change, first of all, in our mind, how do we expect for change to take place? Dennis?
Once again, if you don't practice what you believe in, are you really doing something on a positive basis? Change has to start one step at a time, just like we landed a guy on the moon. One step at a time. You don't press a button and an epiphany changes for everybody, and all of a sudden the world is a new place. Mm-hmm. Each human or child of God must do their part. If they don't, then the entire effect of change is affected in and of itself. Now, each person can do a little bit, but as long as everybody is doing a little bit, they're doing something and working in a positive direction. Yes, change can happen. Can you change people's minds? You may not change all their minds, but the old adage is by example. By example rubs off on other humans. And if you're not showing a good example, whatever happened to the dignity of Abraham then? Because we must be reminded that these are basic foundational values that we cannot ignore. Now, we do have people who like to bicker, split hairs, and argue. They'll do that about anything. But what we must do is remind people of what we have in common and why we must change for the better.
Cartrell, when you made that decision, I'd like to go into your mindset to help educate the individuals out there. When you were serving in the U.S. Reserves and you decided to have your ID tag changed, that it would say, what was it,
Seven Laws of Noah.
Right. What was in your mind? What do you think was the catalyst that made you want to change your ID tag from whatever you were? I'm just curious. How were you listed on your ID tag previously to accepting the seven Noahide commandments?
Well, actually, when I came into the Navy, I put down Christian.
Uh-huh.
I put down Christian because that was back in the year 1990.
Uh-huh.
And by the year 2001, in fact, I said my very last Christian prayer on September 11th, 2001.
Wow.
I think I basically decided to leave Christianity in 2000. But for the sake of praying, I made a Christian prayer September 11, 2001, and you can guess why. I just wanted to reflect myself, you know. And also people who had never heard of it, so they assumed Seven Laws of Noah was a sect of Christianity,
mm-hmm.
like the Seventh-day Adventist.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of my time in the Navy, this coming Thursday, April 4th, I'm going to be speaking at a restaurant called Trattoria Lucia, located at 247-63 Jericho Turnpike in Queens. I'm going to be speaking on the psychology of the suicide bomber.
Mm-hmm.
And the information is based on what I learned while serving 21 years in the Navy Reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, when most people think about the suicide bomber, they think of Muslims. However, historically, in the 20th century and the 21st century, there have been at least four groups of suicide bombers associated with particular religion. And those were Christianity, Hinduism, Shintoism, and Islam. Ironically, I found two groups that have no, to my knowledge, suicide bombers, and that is Buddhists and Jews. Buddhists commit suicide for protest, but
mm-hmm.
they do not take anyone with them. And the Jewish bombers of the King David Hotel warned people to leave the building before it blew up.
Right.
So, that's just two of the issues I'll be discussing this coming Thursday evening. The doors open at 7:30, and they start serving refreshments at that time. So if anyone wants to drop by, you're more than welcome.
Is there a contact number, Cartrell, that people can use to speak to you if they want to learn more about the event?
Well, you might want to look up the Queens Village Republican Club. That they're hosting the meeting. It's going to be at the Trattoria Lucia restaurant, but it's being hosted by the Queens Village Republican Club.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And,
very good.
Yeah. And another thing, one of the men who's running for mayor, Mr. Katsimatidis, will be speaking there. And by the way, I am not endorsing that particular candidate, but he'll be speaking there also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, gentlemen, I want to, before we start to go into scriptural and oral Torah traditions, which includes, of course, the Rambam. This morning, I was listening to, actually, it's a very excellent program for community activists to turn into, which is basically, it's so interesting. In New York City, you have a radio station called The Fan, which is a sports talk radio show. And there happens to be an excellent radio host who actually has one of the oldest shows, if not the oldest show, on the fan. His name is Brian Salter. And I believe he's a professor at Montclair College in Montclair, New Jersey, for those of you who are Jerseyites listening in. And he interviewed for quite a bit a author who now I found the name. I was talking with Dennis about this because I didn't recall her name, and I want to pronounce her name properly. Her name is Frances Moore LaPaix. She wrote a book which is now in its 20th anniversary edition called Diet for a Small Planet. And it's basically how educating people living in this country how to eat properly. So during the interview, Mr. Salter asked Mrs. LaPaix if she was a positive thinking person. She said, "You know what? I'm not a positivist. I'm not into negativism. I'm into possibilityism." And she said something which I thought was very interesting. And then she gave an example of her being into possibilityism. She first of all, she said, "I know that it's not possible to know all possibilities." And then she cited an example. I think it was about five, six, 7 years ago. And Dennis said he heard of this. I was not aware of this, that the United Nations had a program to plant 1 billion trees around the earth. And in the end, as of this year, since that time, they not only planted 1 billion trees, they planted 7 billion trees, which is certainly very good for the ecological balance of this planet, because we do know there are many voices that cry out over unnecessary deforestation in certain parts of it, especially in the Amazon and South America. And she mentioned the country that has planted the most trees since this project took force has been in Ethiopia. And she happened to speak to an Ethiopian who talked with amazement how beautiful the country looked. Now, my two angles on it, and then I'm going to toss the ball over, the virtual speech ball, to Dennis and Cartrell, is number one, I like for you, John, to try to connect the dots between the idea that it is not possible to know all possibilities, and connected to a teaching which has its roots ultimately in biblical and all spiritual systems, with God all things are possible. And the idea of here is a person, her personal conversation with an Ethiopian man talking about the pride and the beauty that he saw in the earth being replenished through the planting of trees, and how this is whether the United Nations intended or not, or the people planted the trees on an individual basis intended or not, this is a way of expressing our faith that if we make our vessels, if we do our diligence to be proper stewards of the earth, look how beautiful the Most High will make this earth appear to us despite all the troubles in the world. So Dennis, please take it away.
It's very easy to create change of trees. And like you mentioned before, that lady said, can we change? Well, if you pick a neutral subject, you can make a lot more improvement and change for the better. So here's the UN ignoring all the people in the world, but actually concentrating on trees.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good. Trees do not go to heaven. Trees are here as is. Trees do not have souls. However, if you want to make a change in rocks, trees, and other things that's on the earth, it's easy to do. But what about all the humans that are here?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the real change and the real difference should be. So it's very easy to plant more trees because you can put in a seed and the seed will grow. God made sure that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But what he didn't make sure is everybody following the correct path they should be on.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we must concentrate on making a better life for humans so that they can prosper, grow, and follow the Lord. In reference to what Quattrell was talking about previously, I don't care if you're left-handed or right-handed. I don't care who your mother or father is. I don't care what identity of your religion is. The only thing I want to know is, do you believe in God? Because we must practice what we believe in.
Mm-hmm. Cartrell, your take on these matters.
I see. This morning I was surfing the internet and I decided to read the new Egyptian constitution. It's about 4 months old.
Mm-hmm.
The good news in Egypt, you have freedom to practice and set up a house of worship of your religion. The bad news is you have a choice of three: Islam, Christianity, or Judaism. If you're a Baha'i, if you're a Hindu, if you're a Shinto, a Buddhist, or anything else, you do not have the right to worship in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
They only, I hope they include, I guess, the laws of Noah by coming under Judaism. But their freedom of religion is the freedom of only three Abrahamic religions: Islam, Christianity, and Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they believe in God. They believe in one God. Some non-Christians see that Christians believe in one God. However, a good part of Christianity believes one God has three aspects.
Right.
And I just met a college friend of mine who calls herself a Christian, but she believes in apparently many gods. I don't know what she believes. It seems like a whole pantheon of gods she believes in. I didn't go into details in her belief system, but she calls herself a Christian. This is some kind of Christianity from Japan called Reiki Christianity. But I just, in 2011, I was tending to a dying friend who was dying of cancer, and I was the beneficiary of her estate. I've known her for about 20, 30 years. She happens to be an atheist. I do not care if a person is an atheist. I do not like to hear that people are atheists. That bothers me, but that is their prerogative.
Right.
This morning, I saw a sign. It said, "To our Christian friends, happy Easter. To our Jewish friends, happy Passover. To our atheist friends, good luck."
That's beautiful.
Yes. And, yes.
You know what, Cartrell, good luck translates into Hebrew, mazel tov, which we usually say at like weddings and bar mitzvahs and, you know.
Yeah.
but I think that's a different spin on good luck, not the mazel tov that we wish when people make marriages,
right,
or have family celebrations.
Yeah. Yeah. A famous person who I like, who happens to be an atheist, is the amazing Randy. He's an illusionist.
Uh-huh.
And he used to entertain me when I was a child, you know, on television. And he talks about, what he does is trickery. And he hates when people use that same trickery to claim they have some kind of psychic power.
Right.
And I like the way he does that. He himself is an atheist. I do not hold it against him. I like the way he goes out to expose frauds and charlatans and people who deceive people. I think that's a very good mission. I am upset that he is an atheist, but I do not hold it against him, you know.
Sure.
Any more than my friend who was dying of cancer. I did not try to make her believe in anything as she went out. She did, her last 3 months she was alive, she seemed to be interested in the Catholic Church, but I did not push her in that direction.
Right.
I mean, she was 74 years old, and I was not out to change her belief system. I was just out to tend to her dying needs of her estate and her pet and, you know, and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Coach. Gentlemen, we're almost at the midway point, and I have a song that I'd like to play by Joseph Israel. Joseph is on the banks of a new opportunity, hopefully to release a new album, which hopefully we'll be interviewing about him future shows. I'd hoped he had been able to come on today's show, but I don't think he's available. This is a song that he wrote about basically about creative energy. It's a live song that was recorded in Philo Orange, I guess that's the name of the club, in Philo, California, on November 3rd, 2012. And I want to say something very interesting about Joseph Israel. He is trying to spur what I would call a movement of musicians, artists, trying to have concerts where they can raise money to help for certain charitable funds, and as well also trying to create an environment where families can attend the concerts and not have like a separation of generation, meaning it shouldn't be just a show for like 30-year-olds and over. It shouldn't be an R-rated or, you know, how much more so an X-rated type of show. It shouldn't be a show just for adolescents who need to get away from their parents. Be the type trying to create a cultural environment in music, which is a very brave venture on his point, because it could be the sacrifice of quicker commercial success, where basically everything is hefker, is made randomless and ownerless in terms of who can pick up on the entertainment just to make a buck. But Joseph is in this struggle, and I want to offer up my humble blessings and greetings to him, if hopefully he'll do archive version, that we're certainly aware and praying for success to create this revolution, evolution of cultural entertainment in this country, and let's spread around the world like a cycle of positive thought, speech, and action. And this is a song called All About, where he talks about creative energy and the human family experience. Please, it's about a 6 or 7 minute song, and then Joseph concludes a little live talk, and then we'll get back to the show. Enjoy, everyone.
Life gives stream every day for my sheep. I got to
about this crossing and planting of seeds. All about the good things that grow on the trees. I want to see the people in a one-harmony. We got creative energy about the good vibes that flow every day. All about giving the most high the praise. I want to see the blessing of the human race. No time for war, no time for the rat race. All about this sprouting and planting of seeds. All about the cannabis that grew on the tree. I want to see the people in a one harmony. Creative energy. One road to choose. Check the frequency, my brother. Yes.
And that was Joseph Israel's All About, and hopefully we'll be hearing more about this young man's blazing and grazing, his blessed creation to create family entertainment. Sounds kind of refreshing, Cartrell and Dennis. What do you think? The idea of actually being able to have the mothers, fathers, daughters, and sons, and maybe even grandchildren come to the same event to be culturally entertained, spiritually nourished. Not an easy task. Any take on that, Dennis and Cartrell?
Well, the idea of universal music is an old idea, but it's very hard to get people to concentrate or at least focus on something they have in common even, because normally people are looking for what their differences are. And they get great pride in their differences. But here we have the opposite effect of trying to bring everybody together on a universal basis.
Baruch Hashem. Cartrell?
I don't have a comment at the moment.
Okay. With that being said, Dennis, as we are accustomed to or have been for the past year plus, what would you like to share with us from the teachings of Rambam today?
Well, I thought the concept of prophecy was in the air, Don, no?
Well, read away. We will respond, hopefully, in a peaceful and pleasant manner.
Okay. Uh-oh. There we go. We're going to go to the Guide to the Perplexed. Page 227, Don.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm sorry, I don't. You'll have to read it. I'm going to tune up my ears, hopefully work on
my
expensive.
This is Maimonides, all the words from Maimonides here. It's on it's page 227, and it's titled On Prophecy. It says, we have described three kinds of perfection: mental perfection acquired by training, perfection of the natural constitution of the imaginative faculty, and the moral perfection produced by the suppression of every thought of bodily pleasures and of every kind of foolish or evil ambition. These qualities are, as it is well known, possessed by the wise men in different degrees. The degrees of prophecy, of prophetic faculty, vary in accordance with this difference. Faculties of the body are, as you know, at one time wearied, corrupted, at others in a healthy state. Imagination is certainly one of the faculties of the body. You find, therefore, that prophets are deprived of the faculty of prophesizing when they mourn, are angry, or similarly affected. Mm-hmm. Our sages say, inspiration does not come upon a prophet when he is sad or languid. This is the reason why Jacob did not receive any revelation during the period of his mourning, when his imagination was engaged with the loss of Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
The same was the case with Moses when he was in a state of depression through the multitude of his troubles, which lasted from the murmurings of the Israelites in consequence of the evil report of the spies, till the death of the warriors of that generation. He received no message of God as he used to do, even though he did not receive prophetic inspiration through the medium of the imaginative faculty, but directly through the intellect. We have mentioned it several times that Moses did not, like other prophets, speak in similes. This will be further explained in chapter 14, but it is not the subject of the present chapter. There was also persons who prophesied for a certain time and then left off altogether. Something occurred that caused them to discontinue prophesizing.
Mm-hmm.
The same circumstance, prevalence of sadness and dullness, was undoubtedly the direct cause of interpretation of prophecy during the exile. For can there be any greater misfortune for man than this, to be a slave brought for money in the service of ignorant and vulturous masters, and powerless against them, as they unite in themselves the absence of true knowledge and the force of all animal desires, such as the evil state has been knowledge and the force of all animal desires. Such an evil state has been prophesied to us in the words, and quoted from Amos, they shall not run to and fro to seek the word of God, but shall not find it. Her king and her princes are among the nations of the law, are among the nations. The law is no more. Her prophets also find no vision from among the nations. Her prophets find no vision from the Lord. Lamentations. This is a real fact, and the cause is evident. The prerequisites of prophecy have been lost. In the Messianic period, may it soon commence. The prophecy will therefore be in our midst, as has been promised by God.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Dennis, you mentioned something about I think you meant lamentations. You said laminations.
All right, so I'm not
okay,
perfect.
I mean, people are probably going to be looking for stickers or decals, like, where is this written on that lamination? You know? But, I mean, there's not much to comment on as much as I'd like to embellish this with another teaching by Rambam in his commentary to the Mishnah known as the Shmona Prokim. And we're talking about prophecy, the sixth principle. Rambam, I think last week, I think perhaps we'll make it part of the presentation, that Rambam had drafted up 13 essential articles of faith. And the sixth and seventh principle related to prophecy, and that Moses was the king of all prophets. Now, feeding off of that, in his commentary to the Mishnah, then we're going to read a little bit from his Mishnah Torah on the teaching, the laws of the foundational Torah, what constitutes prophecy or the principles of prophecy, who is a prophet. So reading from here, we see a thorough explanation of this principle would be lengthy, and it's not our intention to present a philosophical demonstration of each of the principles, nor to clarify the means of comprehending each one, for that would involve every branch of wisdom. Rather, we will give them a brief examination. And there's various verses the Rambam said that testify to levels of prophecies issued by the prophets, which hopefully in future shows we will go into. I believe Rambam states there are 11 specific levels of prophetic experience. Now, I'm now plucking from Rabbi Chaim Miller, a young Jewish scholar, rabbi who lives here in Crown Heights, who put together the Slager version of Rambam's 13 Principles of Faith, again, focusing on the principles of 6th and 7th principles, we just mentioned tersely, with an anthology of commentaries from the Talmud, the Midrash, Rishonim, and Achronim, which are different various periods of rabbinical sages and elucidations from the work of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. This is published by the Gutnick Library of Jewish Classics. So he wants to bring out three salient points that he encourages us to remember. Prophecy occurs when the human mind is primed to receive pure intellectual form. At that point, point number two, the human intellect merges with an emanation of divine intellect. Human intellect interfaces or interacts, configures with divine intellect. And number three, this can only take place with individuals who are endowed with extremely refined character traits. Now, that's a very important point, Blessed Souls, because with each intellectual nugget of new consciousness we're able to attain, whether through our own efforts or people share with us new ideas, new thoughts, which inspire us, there is going to be, whether we're conscious or not, a experience within the human soul to react in one of three ways. And these are just three general presentations of how the human being will react from within their soul consciousness and then reflecting it back to their human consciousness, their human intellect called the Seichel Anoshi, which is basically which is interacting, again, whether we're conscious or not of it, with the divine intellect. A person is either going to develop a love of the subject matter that has just been presented to them, whether they've been handed it, so to speak, on the virtual silver platter of someone sharing information with them, or they have gone into a soul-searching endeavor to learn more about that subject matter. Or it happens to be that divine providence brings them to whatever circumstance led them to learning about that matter. Now, they can develop a love of that subject matter and to want to learn more about it. They can actually develop a disdain for it and not want to learn more about it, and sometimes get to the extreme when they learn something that doesn't agree with their mindset, they discourage other people from learning about that consciousness. And then there's a third category, which is really the balanced level, where a person says, okay, I've learned this new consciousness, this new intellect, this, like, for instance, what Dennis just shared with us, and I'm going to try to set a time in my life on a daily basis or a biweekly basis or a monthly basis or every other day basis to learn more about it and try to integrate it into my consciousness and see, by integrating into my own consciousness, do I want to talk about it with other people? There are some people I don't want to talk about it with them because, for instance, they might have opposite viewpoints of the thing that I just learned about. So I want to share this with now, I've already shared it, but I'd like to go to now Dennis and Cartrell. Cartrell and Dennis, we'll start with Cartrell. Cartrell, how do you approach, bringing a mindset, like, for instance, what you're talking about to other people when they're not necessarily going to be thinking on the same wavelength of you, but if you make a presentation a certain way, you think it might get their interest, which would be for their benefit?
Well, you should say that, because just last night I picked up a book, and it's called Tung Fu for Schools. I bought two books. One's called Tung Fu.
One's
called Tung Fu. Yeah, Tung Fu.
Not Kung Fu, but Tung Fu.
Tung Fu, yes. Based on, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And there are certain words you should avoid.
Uh-huh.
And these words lead to arguments. And one of the words is the word but. The word but negates what people have said before, and that causes argument.
Uh-huh.
Instead of using the word but, use the word and.
Uh-huh.
And this is a good way of getting along with people, you know. And, for example, a parent comes to school and she says, I had an appointment to see the principal.
Mm-hmm.
the principal was called away to an emergency meeting. And one person might say, I know you have an appointment, but the principal got called away. Well, another thing to say is, I know you had an appointment, and we are sorry the principal cannot see you. Let us make another appointment. Is there someone else you can see in the principal's, in the principal's place? I mean, these are ways of disagreeing without being disagreeable. But I only read the first like three pages just last night. But that's a good point. If you stop using the word but when you're speaking to people and use the word and you'll see that you'll get along with them much better.
And who wrote this book, Cartrell?
I don't have the title in front of me. But, I mean, you can look it up on the internet. What is called Tung Fu and Tung Fu for Schools. They have, let me have Tung Fu for other areas of life also.
Okay.
But
now,
there's two books that I bought, and I just opened the one, Tung Fu for Schools, and I was very impressed with the first few pages.
But, you know, Cartrell, I don't want to be polemic, but I want to now turn, without arguing with you, to Dennis Ryan to get his look on these matters. Sometimes we could use but. Dennis.
If you're going to speak to people, you got to know your audience. If you're not directing or concentrating or focusing on what your audience will be attentive to, then you're going to either talk under them, over them, or to the sides, and you'll never make a hit anywhere. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important to understand your audience. Like our audience here for the radio now is people who are interested in God, trying to find some interesting information or things they can believe in, but they're not going to jump at something that sounds like it's a short-term deal. Because why are they spending their time even listening to this?
Mm-hmm.
No, they really want to hear more about things that we have in common. And that's why you got to know your audience when you're talking. So it doesn't matter what subject matter you're talking about. I mean, if you had a room full of carpenters, you wouldn't be talking about fishing lures. And this goes on and on and on. So we must gear whatever we talk to other humans is what they're expecting to hear so that they can absorb it and realize if they want to chew part of it, think about it, or actually do it, or even reject it. But if you can't get the attention of your listener, you're wasting your time.
Beautiful. I want to now turn, gentlemen, to because we're in the last 28 minutes of the show, and I want to talk about the Rambam's halachic Jewish law elucidations on prophecy, which is to be found in the Mishnah Torah, in the laws of the foundation of the Torah. And by the way, the beautiful English-Hebrew translation, which is published by Moznayim Publications, which I'm going to be plucking from now. And you can go online to learn more about these books. And they also have, and I know Ron Williams has talked about a lot, the Torah Anthology. Moznayim is spelled Moznaim Publishing Corporation, and they're located on 4304 12th Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Their phone number is 718-438-7680 or 718-853-0525, and we're going to pluck from some of the explanations. I have also the Hebrew version of the Rambam here with me. So basically, it goes as follows, and then we'll I think basically what we're going to do is we're going to read just the first law, and then we're going to turn to one of the most mysterious and yet still accessible teachings of all the prophetic teachings, the book of Daniel, although none of us can claim to know all of it, because at the end of chapter 12 of Daniel, the Most High told the prophet that these matters will be sealed until the end of days. Anyway, Rambam talks about the following, that it is from the foundations of our faith. And Rambam here is talking about faith for all mankind, not just for the Jewish people. The original faith of all mankind, humankind, womankind, people, the human family experience. So you hear me talk over and over again. I'll never tire of using that word, which hopefully will become more and more normative in our human society, the human family experience. It's from the foundations of our faith to know that the Almighty communicates in a way that we call prophecy to the children of men. Now, prophecy, blessed souls, and I'm just paraphrasing, I'm just adding in, is not a spiritual freebie. It is to be placed upon someone who is very wise, of strong character. And this type of strong character is manifested by taking the actions not to be overcome by his or her natural inclinations. I mention her because there have been plenty of, well, female prophetesses which are written in Scripture, and many that we don't even know about. Like, for instance, we talked about in the beginning of the show about Claudette Colbert, you know, someone who is not going to have a statue made of her and is not a wide-known icon for people to emulate in terms of courage of, you know, the spirit over the injustices in society that sometimes have occurred historically. The prophet or the person in preparation for prophecy knows how to control their body. In modern language, they become a sensei, a master of their bodily functions to the extent that a human being can become a master of their functions. And instead, they utilize his or her mind to overcome their natural inclinations. And also, they must be very broad and correct in their perspectives, how they look at this world, how they look at the Creator, how that they look at their relationships with other people, and how they look at the relationships between people and other people outside of themselves, outside of their cultures, meaning they are very universal in their outlook because they're trying to make themselves vessels to receive transmissions from the Creator of the universe. Now, a person who is filled with these type of qualities and also is physically strong enough, because we'll talk about that in the future, why does a person have to be physically strong enough to receive prophecy? This person, the Rambam continues, enters what is known as a spiritual consciousness level, a region within their mind and heart called the Pardes, an orchard. It's an area of spiritual ramifications, which hopefully in the future show we will try to elaborate on. And we won't provide all the answers, bless those, but we will hopefully provide you information that will cause you, hopefully, to want to do more research into this idea of why does a prophet have to enter the Pardes, the spiritual orchard of creation, and is drawn into great and sublime concepts. And if this person, he or she, possesses a correct perspective to comprehend and grasp what they are experiencing in their mindset entering this place called Pardes, the spiritual orchard of creation, they will become sanctified. In down the street terms, they'll become holy beings. Holy gods, but holy godly beings, beings imbued with the Spirit of the Most High. And this person now, he or she, will advance and separate him or herself from the masses who proceed in the darkness of the time. And he or she must continue and diligently train him and herself not to have any thoughts whatsoever about fruitless things or the vanities and intrigues of the times. Instead, his or her mind should be constantly directed towards and be bound towards the Most High's throne of glory, which is, again, another term which eventually we hope to elaborate upon. It's not just words. It's not poetic words, polemic, spiritual terms being thrown out by the Rambam. It represents a certain place in the creation. Striving to comprehend the holy and pure forms and gazing at the wisdom of the Holy One, blessed be He, in its entirety, in various forms of revelation from the most elevated spiritual forms that he or she can perceive in this orchard, and going further into their accessing divine instruction in the form of prophecy. But they not only should look into the highest heights of creation, they have to also understand the manifestations of the highest revelations of creation until it comes down to the belly of the earth, the navel of the earth, and appreciating the Most High's mercies and kindness, wisdom and greatness, that he creates the highest of heights of spirituality and the lowest of lowest in this world, and seeing it as one continual string of consciousness, godly consciousness. And after all those preparations, the spirit of prophecy will immediately rest upon him and her. Now, when that spirit rests upon him or her, his soul or her soul now becomes intermingled with angels called Ishim, literally men, meaning angels that appear to be men communicating divine knowledge to him. And this person will be transformed into a different person and will understand with a knowledge different from what it was previously. He or she will rise above the level of otherwise men, as the prophet Samuel told Saul, the King Saul, the eventual King Saul, Shaul, in Samuel 1, chapter 10, verse 6, quote, "The Spirit of God will descend upon you, and you shall prophesy with them, and you will be transformed into a different person." I mean, we're talking here, blessed souls, not about a PhD in consciousness, but become literally a speaker for the Most High. But we see it is not an easy process. None of us should be disappointed that we're not prophets. Hopefully all of us will be encouraged to become the students of the prophets and the lawgivers and the kings and the righteous of creation. And now we're going to go around the table now, starting with Dennis. You're taking these matters as elucidated by Rambam.
As elucidated by Rambam, yes. I don't know if you ever heard of Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Yes, I did.
He died in 1972. He was an ordained rabbi, and he got a doctorate from the University of Berlin in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
He came to America in 1940, and he was a teacher at the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, where he became professor of Jewish ethics and mysticism. I have a short thing that he wrote about on Maimonides and prophecy. I'd like to read it, Don.
Go right ahead.
All right. Maimonides knew to tell himself that God lets anyone achieve prophecy if and when he wants to, but only when he is a perfect man. Maimonides felt it was impossible for a simple man to become a prophet, as for a donkey or a frog to prophesy. No one can go to bed as a non-prophet and then get up as a prophet, for prophecy is unthinkable without proper qualifications and preparation. Even then, its possibility is dependent on divine power. It is not necessarily found, even if someone has reached the utmost level of speculative knowledge and possesses the highest virtues of character. These prerequisites must be joined by the greatest possible perfection of the imagination. Although the achievement of spiritual and ethical perfection depends on man's free will, the perfection of imagination is beyond man's power. It has to be inborn. Imagination is a physical power. Its degree of perfection depends on organic qualities. An organ which is bad from birth cannot become perfect, even though the best lifestyle. These conditions are indispensable because prophetic illumination is the emanation that pours out from God through the agency of active intellect, first in the ability to think and then in the imagination. Every human being with an innate perfection of the imagination is capable of prophecy. He becomes a prophet only if his reason is perfected, his character pure and steady, his thoughts always aiming at sublime things, and his goal the knowledge of God and the contemplation of his works. This man must also be one of those whose thinking and yearning about animal and material things have been overcome, namely the desire for the enjoyment of food, drink, and sex. There are three kinds of perfection Maimonides sees as prerequisites for receiving prophetic illumination: perfection of the mind, character, and imagination. He himself obviously feels he has already attained the first two kinds. His extraordinary appreciation of his own scholarly achievements, to which he frequently gives voice, and his utterances about the qualities of his character, show that he does not by any means feel remote from the level of spiritual and ethical profession. Similarly, his statement about memory suggests that he considers his imagination perfect, for he teaches that memory is a function of the imagination. Only the reserve that has been stamped his behavior induces him to keep silent about the secret of life. All he does in this respect is once to compare the process of inspiration with the flashing of lightning in thick nocturnal darkness. There are people, he says, whose lives have shorter or longer intervals between one stroke of lightning and the next. There are those whose darkness is never lit up. There are people for whom the lightning flashes only once in their entire night. There are those for whom the lightning bursts over and over again, with little interruption, so that they dwell almost in the steady light and that night becomes day. Mayamati's regards enlightenment as a natural phenomenon. The miracle for him is when elimination is not forthcoming, since only preventive interference by God can deprive man of emanation of the active intellect. There can be no doubt that the emanation of the active intellect will pour out of a man who possesses the prerequisites.
Beautiful. Well, that great credit to Rav Heschel for doing so. May he rest in peace. Cartrell, any take on these matters?
It's quite profound. I'm not sure if I can become a prophet by doing all these things, but it would be worth the effort to try. I might become a sage.
I think you are already, Cartrell. And not only that, I think you're a visionary to want to explain, you know, the psychology of suicide bombers. And I was thinking as Dennis was reading this, and actually as it applied to you, that I hope, I'm just humbly suggesting, that you will be able to get some sort of video capture of your presentation, if not for that live presentation, for a future one. And that's something which certainly I can put on my wall in Facebook or something, hopefully that can be turned into a DVD, as an educational tool for middle schools, high schools, and college, and depending on how much you want to upgrade it, probably even for postgraduate collegiate students. I think you've tapped into something which is something which needs the attention of present and future students, living students of human culture who want to try to improve human culture.
Right.
So I hope you
see about that.
I hope you can do that. Gentlemen, we're going to now pull. We have about 14 minutes to go, and I want to pull out from some oral Torah traditions, because we're going to start hopefully as we continue our show on a weekly basis, to cover and to go into. It's going to take probably several years to go through, even though it's only 12 chapters of the Book of Daniel, but I guess I'm invoking the Most High to bless us that we should get through the next couple of years in a peaceful and pleasant manner for Dennis, Cartrell, myself, Ron Williams. Hopefully Joseph Israel will join us. And we want to pluck from some oral Torah traditions, and starting from an overview, Daniel, A Bridge to Eternity, I'm pulling from the Art Scroll Tanakh series, which also makes a wonderful, wonderful means of giving access to the English-speaking public to better understand, according to written and oral traditions, what's going on in the books of the prophets, Daniel being one of them. And here we are so succinctly going to say this, pulling from Sifri Ha'azino, page 306, that Daniel descended to the lion's pit only so that the Holy One, blessed be He, should perform for him miraculous and mighty deeds in order to sanctify his name, God's name, in public. At the same time, we also learn in the book of Daniel of that essential moment that the rabbis elucidated, that at the moment when Nebuchadnezzar, then the king of Babylon, threw three comrades, peers, brothers in arms, spirit and soul of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, into the fiery kiln, the Holy One, blessed be He, instructed Ezekiel, which is talked about in the book of Ezekiel, which we actually learned on. Yes, we read in our congregations around the world as members of the nation of Israel, when Ezekiel, Yechezkel, and Evi was told to resurrect the dead in the Valley of Dura, and this is taught about in, I think it's, oh, what chapter is it in the book of Ezekiel? If maybe I'll look it up when one of you two are commenting on this teaching, but it's talked about in the oral Torah tradition of the Talmudic tractate of Sanhedrin 92b. And also, perhaps a person could reason out, we await for the Messiah, but God does not await a redemption. But Scripture comes to teach us in Isaiah 30, chapter 30, verse 18, therefore the Most High wants to show you favor. So we see, even though great righteous people have been put into perilous situations in these two scenarios of Daniel being thrown into the lion's pit, which is not really the beginning of the story, but more into the meat of the book of Daniel. But at the beginning of the story, we do see the story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And in effect, they had tried to consult with either, again, I don't remember, they either spoke with Daniel or Ezekiel was not accessible, because Ezekiel was actually at that time considered the top prophet of that generation. Daniel was on the ascending order of prophecy. But actually, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were not at that time, according to one opinion, prophets. According to others, they were, but they were not really at the top of top of their game, so to speak, their prophetic prowess. And they had to rely on that simple faith. With that being said, gentlemen, this is juxtaposing, you know, some very, very intense concepts. Daniel being thrown into the lion's pit, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah thrown into the fiery fire because they wouldn't bow down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. I didn't mention that fact. And the idea is saying that when we learn these things, perhaps we could lose sight and lose faith in the coming of the Messiah. But then we're reassured by Scripture in Isaiah 30:18. Therefore, God, Hashem, waits to show you favor. Dennis, I know this is a very favorable day for Christians all around the world. How do you look at these three juxtapositions of verses? In the meantime, I'm going to try to look up in the book of Ezekiel where one can learn about the resurrection of the dry bones in the Valley of Dura.
Well, I got to still go along with Rabbi Herschel here. Because
okay.
in his book called Maimonides, there's a very short paragraph here that says, Maimonides found the key to the enigmas the period in the book of the prophet Daniel. Here he found illuminating utterances that anticipated the events of the present in detail. The indecision of the short-sighted and the confidence of men of understanding are foretold by Daniel. And the quote mm-hmm. is by Daniel. Many shall be sifted, purged, and purified. The wicked do not understand, and they shall do wickedly. But the wise shall understand.
Cartrell, your take on these matters.
It's quite fascinating. I really don't have a comment. It's good to listen to. It's kind of inspiring, but I really can't add anything to it.
Okay. And I just want to point out, yes, I was a little hesitant because sometimes I jump the gun sometimes when I quote verses. I want to try to work on that. I want to make a public resolution, try to be more accurate at times. In the book of Ezekiel, Blessed Souls, you can learn about the resurrection of, actually, it was a portion of the tribe of Ephraim, or Ephraim, I guess you would say in English, Ephraim in Hebrew, who actually tried to leave Egypt before the appointed time of redemption. And they died out there in the desert or in the Valley of Dura. So if you go to chapter 37, verse 1 through 14, you see the encounter between the prophet Ezekiel, Yechezkel HaNavi, and the Most High, where the Most High tells him, I'll just read from here, from Ezekiel 37, verse 9, then he said to me, meaning God told Ezekiel, prophesy to the Spirit, prophesy, O Son of Man, and say to the Spirit, thus the Lord Hashem Elohim, come from the four directions, O Spirit, and blow into these slain people, and they may come to life. And I prophesied, and as continuing in verse 10, I prophesied as I had been commanded, and the Spirit entered them, and they came to life, and they stood upon their feet, a very, very great legion. Verse 11, he said to me, Son of Man, these bones, these are the whole house of Israel, symbolically speaking, of course, allegorically speaking, because they are saying, Those souls of those bones were saying, quote, our bones are dried out and our hope is lost, we are doomed, end of quote, therefore prophesy and say to them, etc., etc. I'll leave everyone else to do their homework. I'll give everyone a homework assignment. Look up verses 13 and 14. And this going back as well to Rene Rasmussen of North Carolina. And also I want to, before I go further, I want to give a public apology to Miss or Mrs. Rebecca, Mrs. Rebecca, please forgive me, ma'am. Mrs. Rebecca, Rebecca Vanderworth, who is of not of Virginia, but is of North Carolina. So I'm sorry, Mrs. Vanderworth, that I said you were from Virginia. I see you're a proud North Carolinian. I mean, who wouldn't want to be? Because Michael Jordan was there. He won a championship from there. Well, getting off with a little Jewish humor as we approach the Final Four in the NCAA double championships, but Dennis and Cartrell, the idea of hope, and we were asked how can we make change. We see that sometimes even we don't see the change is coming, the Most High makes sure that changes are coming. Dennis, any comments on this matter?
Yes, I feel compelled to connect the dots. We originally opened up with the concept of change, or can we change? Mm-hmm. But you brought up the concept of hope now. So by combining them both, we say, can there be change without God's help?
True. The question answers itself, Dennis. That's a rhetorical question. Cartrell,
yes.
your vibe on this?
Not one at the moment.
Okay. Well, you know what, gentlemen? You know what? We were planning to cover 3 verses in Genesis, but we've run out of time. And please forgive me, blessed souls. I hope not to be held in a way accountable in terms of the framing a mindset on your part of false advertising. Hopefully next week, and hopefully we hope to, and just to let Quattro know, because I spoke about with his dentist already, hopefully next Sunday night, which would be April 7th. We hope to do a live broadcast from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. I hope you'll be available, Cartrell. And I hope to be available at that time. Maybe we can bring Dennis Ryan or Joseph Israel, anyone else who wants to call in. So we just covered so much stuff today, and I just felt it was so important on a day of freedom, not only for Jewish people during the Passover Seder, Passover holiday, but also for Christian people. I know this is a day of freedom for them. And I hope for all peoples who are seeking to connect to their divine image, to their higher level that's connected intimately with the Most High, the Ein Sof Baruch Hu, the Infinite Creator, may be blessed, that we continue in this spirit of encouraging others. Yes, we can make a change. None of us, neither Dennis, Cartrell, are going to guarantee it's going to be easy. In fact, it could be quite hard. Yeah. But the becoming more knowledgeable of ourselves as we engage in this struggle to try to make ourselves better and make it a better world makes the process paradoxically easier. Dennis, any concluding comments on that, what I just said? And we'll turn to Cartrell.
Easier? No, life is not easy. We're here for a trial, and we have to do our best. And we ask ourselves, are you doing your best? That doesn't mean you're trying to take the easy way out. We humans sometimes are lazy, and we'll think of a shortcut, like in abbreviations and other things like that, that won't give us any discomfort. But we must face reality, and we must face it with God.
Yes, and before I let Cartrell chime in for his last salient point of today's show, Cartrell, as far as connecting to you via the Booker T. Washington Business League, is there a phone number people can contact you if they have any opportunities or like to explore with you the possibilities of improving life circumstances in the New York City area or greater environs?
Okay, well, my answering service is 718-670-3717.
Beautiful. And your take, sir, on this idea, life is not easy, but the more we are involved in the struggle, paradoxically, it gets even easier.
I once saw an off-Broadway play, and they said, good luck is common sense, and being prepared is the way to go through life, you know. I mean, be prepared for what is coming at you, you know, with help you handle things.
Beautiful. Thank you, Cartrell. Again, I want to thank Booker T. Washington Business League President Cartrell Gore, who, again, Cartrell, please promote where you'll be speaking again in the near future.
This coming Thursday, if the doors open at 7:30, I'll be speaking at the Trattoria Lucia restaurant, which is located at 247-63 Jericho Turnpike in Belrose, Queens. It's being hosted by the Queens Village Republican Club, and my talk will be on the psychology of the suicide bomber. That's Trattoria Lucia restaurant, 247-63 Jericho Turnpike, Queens Village Republican Club. And they're going to be having a man running for mayor there. His name is Mike Casamatas. I do not endorse him, but he will be there speaking about his campaign for mayor. So if you want to come by, you're more than welcome.
Beautiful. And Dennis, I want to thank you again for taking up some of your most valuable of time on a celebratory day for you and your family. And I wish that all of us, that we should go from strength to strength, as is written in Psalms 84. And speaking of strength, one of the things that gives us strength, aside from the Most High's blessings upon us, the fact that we've been blessed and anointed with a Tzelem Elohim, which is no dream, our divine image, which helps us get off in scrimmage to hopefully make this world in a manner that's in fulfillment of prophetic teachings from Isaiah 45:18. The world was not created to be chaotic, but to be a settled place. We have a song from David Dome, our brother in spirit, soul, and body, from jolly old England. And the name of the song is about one other thing that gives us strength, the Most High's Torah. The name of the song is called Torah Give Me Strength by David Dome. Blessed souls, please, I plead with you and I bless you as well humbly. Please do not overestimate the negative aspects of your thoughts, speech, and actions. And please don't underestimate the goodness that's within you, because if the Most High made you, you are good. The rest of the story of how to find out how good you are is until you test yourself on a day-by-day basis, step-by-step basis, take those little baby steps to see how good you can be to make yourself better and in a better world. Take care, everyone.
Take care.
Well,
Praise the Lord.